He's won the election, but how far will Mexico's new president go in changing the direction of the economy? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. For the first time in nearly two decades, Mexico has a leftist president. Andrés Manuel López Obrador, or AMLO, won about 53% of the vote yesterday. Mexico's economy grew 2.4% last year, but drug cartels have fueled violence. There were more than 29,000 murders in 2017. Yakov Anopoulin is emerging markets portfolio manager at PIMCO.
He'll be the first president from south of Mexico City, so the poor areas of Mexico, right? Because the north is more industrialized, closer to the U.S., trades more with the U.S., exports more to the U.S. And I think the reason AMLO has won elections is that, you know, there's a lot of disenfranchised people in Mexico. And this certainly is a vote against the establishment.
Now, he has made conciliatory statements. He's not going to renationalize energy companies. He's going to respect property rights. But there is still an economic worry, isn't there, in how he's going to fulfill these promises?
Oh, very much. And by the way, one of the promises is spending to the tune of 5% of GDP, spending on youth programs, spending on elderly, spending on new refineries. All of that is meant to be paid for by this anti-corruption drive. Spending is very detailed. And then there are these kind of big items of here, we're going to save money here and there, which is much less tangible. There is some concern in markets. And that's why I think Mexican assets have trailed in recent months, in that this is a country that has been on a fairly robust fiscal path. So the concern is the direction of travel changing towards looser fiscal policy?
And that can have a pretty broad impact. The peso weakening, credit ratings going down, you know, it could lead to recession if they're not careful.
The rating agencies are, you know, I think, watching Mexico very closely. Pemex, their state-owned oil company, is not the most robust entity out there. Very much reliant on state support. So it's going to be a very delicate balancing act because, I mean, you may rule for the population. I think that that's actually very positive. But you sort of cannot allow some of these important fiscal anchors built up over the past decades to be jettisoned.
Just a quick word on NAFTA, because the negotiations are suspended. But obviously, this is something that he's going to have to grapple with President Trump.
Very much. The reality is the negotiations are frozen until 2019. You had the Mexican political cycle. Now with the U.S. midterms, you have that political cycle. NAFTA is still President Trump's call.
Yakov Arnopoulin. Let's do the numbers. Uncertainty continues to hit global markets, which are trending broadly lower this morning. Data showed shipments of goods from China and Japan contracted last month, while confidence among big manufacturing firms in Japan worsened for the second quarter in a row. Now, last week, Germany's chancellor came back from an EU summit with what she thought was a good deal on migration, with proposed European centres to manage asylum seekers. But today, Angela Merkel will hold emergency talks as her interior minister and coalition partner isn't happy and threatened to resign over the issue. The BBC's Jenny Hill has more.
Another day, another ultimatum. Angela Merkel's troublesome interior minister and leader of her Bavarian coalition partners now says he'll resign if he doesn't get his way over migration policy. Horst Seehofer wants to turn away migrants from the German border if they've registered elsewhere in the EU first. He rejects Mrs. Merkel's best offer, the EU migration plan, agreed at a summit of leaders last week. Mr. Seehofer is due to meet the German Chancellor later today, but clarified his position in the early hours of this morning.
Yes, I said that I will present my decision to resign and that I will implement this decision if no solution is found within the next 3 days. It is our, it is also my step towards an agreement with the CDU.
It's hard to predict what this means for Mrs. Merkel's fragile coalition government. A compromise looks unlikely. If Mr. Seehofer does resign, Mrs. Merkel must still quell the Bavarian uprising, albeit under a different leader. The number of people seeking asylum in Germany has fallen sharply. But this extraordinary row serves to illustrate how the subject of migration remains a highly charged political issue, not only for Mrs. Merkel's unhappy coalition, but for Europe itself.
Jenny Hill. Wimbledon, the oldest, most prestigious tennis tournament in the world, kicks off here in London today, and those thrilling moments will be available faster than ever, thanks to new AI technology. It's been programmed by Sam Seddon, who works on IBM's Watson supercomputer.
It's listening to the noise of the crowd. So if you get the oohs and the ahs throughout a point, it's listening out for that. And then it's looking at the players, looking for those particularly emotive shots. So the fist pumps, the hands up, the shouting. And then combining all of that with the data about the match. So when are there particular pressure points in the game? And all of those three things together would tag what are the most exciting moments in the match. And then it combines those into the highlights reels and creates the graphics.
And is that the most reliable way of picking highlights? Does it work?
It absolutely does. I mean, there was over 14 million views of that content last year. We're hoping for even more this year because we've made it even better.
And how quickly does it turn it around?
We've sped it up quite a lot. So last year it was about 45 minutes. This year it can do it in 5 minutes from the match completing. We can have content out on the highlights package on the web and social.
Wow. And there's a lot of data that you collect on all the matches, right? Give us a sense of that. And why on earth is it important for Wimbledon?
Off the court, you've actually got three different streams of data, and we combine all of that together to create insights from it. So last year, under just the data we captured, about 4.8 million points of data. And it's important because sport is, you know, it's very an emotive thing, and people are looking for storylines, and a lot of those storylines exist in the data. It's about telling the story of the match, and that's what we help the commentators with, and that's what the fans are looking for as well. Why did somebody win?
4.8 million points of data, you said.
Yes.
Does that mean it gives you any more insight into who's going to win?
It gives us a good understanding as to why people have won in the past, but, you know, that isn't always an indication of future performance. So, you know, we can track the tactics within a match, and we do that through Slam Tracker on the web. But unfortunately, I can't tell you who's going to win this year.
Sam Seddon there. Finally, you know that saying about being penny wise and pound foolish? Last year, the US Mint produced 8 billion pennies, resulting in a $69 million loss. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC.